Hey, this is Taylor.
This is Jake.
And this is Dan.
And this is Unicorn Finders, where we are on the search to illuminate the elusive unicorn factor in everyday people, businesses, and relationships. Hope you enjoy.
On our thing.
What's going on, everybody? We are live this morning. We're hanging out. What's going on, everybody? We have a guest. We are back to having guests. And we have Dan Thompson here with us today in the flesh from Tampa Bay Lightning winning the Stanley Cup last night. Dan,
It was probably the coolest sports moment of my life. Playing hurt this morning, playing tired right now. But you don't get these chances very often.
You don't get these chances very often, except back to back years.
But last year we weren't able to go. Like, it was in Canada in like a bubble. So like, I've never seen. This is the first time I've ever seen my team win like final game in person. I've been to a bunch of like World Series, NBA Finals, and stuff like that, but I've never seen them win like the whole kit and caboodle.
That's special. And you've been to like every game from the Islanders and.
Yeah, actually, from the Panthers to Jake's Hurricanes to the Islanders
So you have not missed, a home game during the playoffs.
I've gone to all but two.
That's amazing. Cool.
Yeah. Well, so I'm hurt. My wallet's a little bit thinner, but
that's fair. That's fair.
It was all worth it.
And then now we're here talking to a unicorn himself, Daniel Norton. What's going on, man? Daniel resides here in Nashville. He's a fellow Nashvillian. Kathy, it's good to see you. Oscar, it's good to see you. Chris Keyshore, it's good to see you. Again, y'all watching us, add us comments, let us know where you tuned in from. I know Daniel would love to know where you're tuned in from, so please let us know. But Daniel, I want to go ahead and get this thing rolling. First off, I want to read a little bio about you that you sent me.
Okay.
So Daniel is a serial entrepreneur and career software developer. Daniel is currently CTO and co-founder of Neural Payments, a fintech startup focusing on P2P solutions for credit unions and community banks. Previously, he was CTO and co-founder of LeanKit, acquired by Plainview. We use that at Vaco. And Daniel holds an MBA from the Sloan School of Management at no other than MIT. So, Daniel, thank you again for coming on the show, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Super excited, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
Glad to be here with y'all.
I'm just going to get my bio real quick. It's the exact opposite of Daniel's there. That's it.
Yeah, your bio. Yeah.
Exact opposite.
The exact, no college, only high school. Has not done anything in the, all right, y'all. Let's dive in.
I gotta connect with Dan here. Can I add one thing to my bio? Is when you say it doesn't happen often, I'm a lifelong Chiefs fan, and I know that feeling, man. of like it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, you got to live it up, man.
I'll be honest with you, Daniel, as a Dolphins fan in football, it's never gonna happen there. So I gotta relish it while I can, you know.
Well, it's never going to happen, but you have, like, you know, the greatest record of all time, right?
Yeah, not a big deal.
We still talk about the 60s. All right, so Brandon, what's going on?
It was the early 70s.
That's fine. Frank, what's going on? Brandon, what's going on? Elliot, hi from Mississippi. That's a lot of I's in that sentence, Elliot, between your name and the high in the Mississippi. All right, so Daniel, so let's talk about Neural Payments. What the heck is it? What are y'all doing? Let's kind of break that down a little bit, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
Why is it better than Zelle? Go.
Yeah. Why is it better than Zelle? Which I don't even know what that is. So here we go.
I actually appreciate you asking that question, because sometimes I'll to go into my little spiel and I have to explain what a Zelle is. We are a P2P solution. Like, we all probably use Venmo or PayPal and stuff like that, Apple Pay, all that kind of junk, right? Well, banks also want to be able to offer that service to their depositors. Credit unions want to offer it to their members, right? And so there is a player. There's a couple of companies that do this right now. There is a player in the space called Zelle. Right. And they're pretty big. They're owned by Bank of America and Chase and a couple others. And I always forget who all owns them, but they're owned by the great big banks, right? Credit unions and smaller community banks very much do not want to do business with Zelle for, you know, just businessy reasons kind of thing. You know, I don't know if you ever, one time when I was in college, I was working at a bottling plant, right? And I brought my lunch, right? You know, and I had a Pepsi in my lunch, but it was a Coca-Cola bottling plant. And that really ticked off. I mean, they got
we should
super
have put
mad.
That in your bio. We should have put that in your bio. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I didn't know to a Coca-Cola plant.
Yeah.
A few truths and a lie. Was once thrown out of a Coca-Cola bottling plant.
Pepsi. Yeah. I love it.
So that's what it is. So that's the product is our customers, our banks and credit unions that want to offer the service kind of for free to their members and depositors. And there's a little, you know, there's itty bitty teeny weeny, like, you know, fractions of penny fees and stuff that go on for them. Where there are some, just the way that we process payments and some of our fraud protection stuff is differenter than how Zelle does that. So I think we have a cool advantage right there. And sort of the network effect that we want to build amongst community banks and credit unions is, you know, that's kind of the early stages of phase two of the business.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So where did this idea come from? Like how did it originate? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, like you just kind of was somebody using like, you know, Zelle or Zelt, whatever the daggum name is. And they're like, you know what? We should make this better. Like, yeah. Like how did that come up? Or like, okay. Did someone just eat a Pepsi one, drink a Pepsi one day?
Somebody just showed up. Yeah. At a yeah. Mr. Pibb plant with a Pepsi. And
here we go.
Yeah. You don't want that. Okay. So, my co-founder, the CEO, Mick Oppie, was a classmate of mine at MIT, and he comes from the fintech space. He's kind of worked with like the big, I don't want to, actually, you probably don't call that fintech. You just call financial services, right? These great big payment processors that move, you know, billions or trillions of dollars, whatever, through their networks every year. And he was head of product at one of these companies, and he just had stuff that these banks were reaching out to him like, hey, dude, can you guys make this thing for us? Because we really need it. And like, there's nothing else that's happening. And he had to keep telling us like, hey guys, I'd love to build that for you, but I've got this giant roadmap of all this other stuff I got to do for my great big company that I work for. So he just had this idea and he brought it to class kind of early in our program. And he worked it out and the professors all kind of worked it out where he could like, whatever topic we were talking about in that class, he could kind of turn that around for his assignments and stuff to like, try to validate or really actually try to kill his idea, right? So he spent 2 years trying to kill his idea while we were students and it didn't work. So we got to the end of it he's like, I'm doing this, and he quit his job. And a couple other pals from our class had started like an agency kind of thing. Like what's the opposite of something on steroids? It's like Vaco not on steroids, right? It's the itty bitty little agency. They got him off the ground. You know, with the first basically like proof of concept sort of thing. And then I showed up 6 months later and was like, Mick, I'm gonna help you take it all the way to market.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So part of the project in college was literally to try to kill this idea.
Yes. Yeah. Like he would, yeah. Like, why would the market not want this? Why would competitors squish this? Why?
It's actually great. I mean, if the little guys are going to compete with Wells Fargo and a Bank of America, which we know are just terrible anyway, you know, you don't want to share your data. You don't want to share, you know, you don't want to share any of those patterns or anything or give them any reason to have insights that they don't deserve. Right. So that's a.
No, and then you actually pick up on that's exactly it. Like, yeah, if you happen to be the president of, you know, a little Nashville credit union. And you're like, you know, you want to offer the service to your members, but to do so, you'd have to hand over your entire book of depositors over to Bank of America. You're like, oh man, I'm not.
That seems a little intrusive.
You know.
Yeah, right. For sure. Yeah, that's interesting.
We had my previous startup. We had you know, a Fortune 1 retailer in Arkansas. I can't tell you who they were, but they. They were not interested in putting their data out on AWS. And okay. You know, when they told us that, we're like, you know what? That kind of resonates to me. Like, yeah, I don't think I would do that if I were you guys either. You know, so
right.
that was the thing that helped us move to Azure instead of AWS.
Interesting. Well, so, I mean, and that's another thing too. I've actually heard, I forgot who I was talking to, but I've started to hear that a lot of retail companies don't want to put their data on AWS because essentially Amazon is another retail company.
Yeah.
I've heard things. If people are watching, can confirm or deny if they've heard that as well. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's just something I've been hearing.
Right. Yeah. I can neither confirm nor deny for you that like Amazon is or would or could use their data in this way. But I would totally resonate with if you owned, you know, Target, you'd be like, I don't, let's just not, you know?
Yeah. So I don't want to go too off neural because I want to continue to talk about that, but I'm interested to hear kind of your story as well, right? So, you know, I love Vaco, Nashville, loved Linkit, Plainview. Obviously you are part of that from essentially ground zero.
Yep.
Built that up. Now you're part of another startup, ground zero, building that up. What are just some, I guess give the individuals who are watching maybe some highs and some also some lows and maybe some learning things that you've picked up over the years, because I mean, both have been really grassroots. I mean, have been very, you know, from scratch.
Yeah. You know, Linkit, that was my first like co-founder startup. I'd worked for some startups before, just wonderful, lovely people. Part of that, so it was a little agency called Firefly Logic.
Yep.
Shout out Firefly. I love them. They're dear friends. And I think I had such a wonderful time working for them. I was like, gosh, this is so great. I'd like to own my own that does this. And I had some different buddies and we set out and started our own company. But that was our first go of, you know, owning a company at all. And I think that there was a whole lot, we just, you know, naivety of first time co-founders, first time entrepreneurs. And then, you know, when it got to that inflection point, when it started just growing super fast,
right?
There was just a lot of lessons to learn and learn. And it's not just about the technology, but about people management. Like, and then it became not just managing people, but managing managers of people, like, oh my goodness, kind of thing. That's a totally different beast.
Correct.
So, you know, it was when Linkit started going on just kind of this big curve up,
right?
That the whole idea entered that like, I should go get an MBA, right? And kind of learn some of this, the more of the businessy managing stuff of this kind of thing. And the plan was for me to do that. And kind of like Mick was, you know, using school to like kill his idea, I was going to use school as sort of free consulting help from MIT professors on how to run this startup in Nashville.
That's smart.
We sold the company. So I got to focus on school and it was great. So I got a chance to like reset and reprogram myself and learn and, you know, just reflect kind of thing. And get ready for my next adventure.
So a few years ago, me and some buddies were looking to start, this is, 5 years ago now, looking to start something in the fintech space.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what came down for us, where we were specifically trying to go, the startup cost just from like the legal fees and the like all of the regulations and all of that was insane.
Yes.
And frankly, we were broke AF at that time. So like there was like no way that we could even get, you know, an NS investor in that. What did that look? Was it just insane? Because I can imagine you got to probably have a certain amount of reserves and like all this stuff just to like cover costs and things. You know, what does that look like? Was it just
dude, you have beat me to the punch on like the Dan, what have you learned about fintech? That's exactly it. Holy cow. Holy cow. The barrier to entry to the first dollar of revenue is extraordinary. And we are, hey man, you guys, you know, you had listeners that want to know successes and failures. I mean, let's just jump into that. I jumped on board the company right before the apocalypse thinking that we were going to be at revenue, you know, by like fall of 2020. And I don't think the global pandemic was necessarily like the thing that kept us from reaching that goal. But so we are right now, like today, I'm taking time away because I love you guys, from like the last frantic mile of onboarding, you know, our first customers, like actual live paying, moving real dollars for real depositors kind of stuff. But it has taken us all of this time of exactly what you're talking about, like regulation stuff and like SOC 2 compliance and PCI compliance and like having to completely re-architect our stuff.
Hey, just for those listening, if you need to go through SOC or SOC 2 compliance, found this awesome site that does it now really cheap for startups called llama.com.
Yeah.
Llama.com has been pretty impressive for a lot of startup founders. I know I've been trying to get some of that quickly.
Yeah, so, that is a huge amount of work.
Llama.
Yeah.
Llama.com.
Absolutely nuts. Shout out to Llama.
But go ahead, Daniel.
No. Go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to ask, what was the reasoning behind? So you have Venmo, you have Cash App for kind of consumer to consumer. You have Zelle as the big player that was created by, you know, Bank of America and Wells Fargo, like collectively together. Mm-hmm. What was the reason that you guys and your co-founders had to create this? Where did you guys decide that there was a need? And then what is the value prop to use you guys compared to, you know, a Zelle?
Right. Yeah. So what I love about it was we didn't decide this. The market communicated to us that they needed this thing that didn't exist. Okay. So there were bank presidents and, you know, head of IT of credit unions and things that were reaching out and saying, I need this thing. There's not one. So that was the driving force of it that said, okay, well, we'll explore this and we'll see if there's actually a thing there to pursue and, you know, hope to report back to you that, there definitely is. So, and maybe jumping ahead a little bit with that, we do. I mean, there is like tremendous demand right now. There are like literally a dozen or more banks every single day, like brand new banks coming out of the woodwork. Like, hey, when are you going to have this thing turned on? When are you going to have this thing turned on? So, I mean, so just to be clear, we are pre-revenue for a few more months. And so I'll come back on. Taylor, that's what I was saying to you before we got on the show. I was like, hey, man, I might have the more interesting story in a few months, but I don't know. Maybe I can come back for round two if I'm in.
Yeah, we can go. Dude, you're always welcome, man. You're always welcome.
Well, yes, so if it happens that we're going to put you on like a Google alert and any article or anything that comes out, we're gonna be like posting it and like doing all this kind of stuff, right? Because we want to follow the story.
And so, Dan, you were asking more about like the value prop. So for a consumer, a value prop is for us, it's a tertiary offering, but it's more for the bank, right? So the consumer is going to stay inside their banking experience. And I don't mean to bash on Zelle. It's, you know, it's a good product, but a differentiator, right? So Zelle is all about the Zelle brand, right? So you would like, you probably are getting emails from like, hey, you're a member of Chase Bank, get the Zelle app, right? Or you could bypass all that and you could download the Zelle app yourself, right? Where we are way more about the branding of our customers. So, you know, Nashville Credit Union, we want their branding on all the stuff. We're going to incorporate into their apps. We're going to incorporate into their ecosystem. Our URLs are going to see nashvillecreditunion.org or whatever they are kind of thing, right? So we want to promote their community and their mission. And we're white label kind of thing. So that's from the consumer perspective. Also, so I don't know if you've ever gone through this thing where you're like, hey man, I need to send you some money. Can I just Venmo you? And you're like, oh, dude, I don't have Venmo. Can you just send PayPal? It's like, wow, that figured. Like my wife has the pay thing. I don't have that run right now. Well, can I Zelle you? What is Zelle? Like you go through that thing.
Right.
I didn't do Venmo whatsoever. I hadn't even like heard of it. I just was
Jake
like,
oh, sends after checks the first one I downloaded. Mail.
Yeah,
Cash App was the first one.
Yeah,
so I looked into Venmo. I hated the aspect of the social media behind.
Oh no,
I hated every aspect of it. So I was like, I'm never downloading this app.
Doesn't bother me.
Dude, Jake still travels with traveler's checks.
I was like, actually, do you trade?
He's a member of Diners Club.
Yeah.
Dude, I agree with you. That's such a random. It's like, hey, I don't know, man. Like, I don't want my finances out on Facebook. You know, I don't want like a Twitter feed of how I bought pizza last week. Like, why did they think of that?
Stupid that people like it. Like, I'm just like, I don't trust people who like to scroll through and see, yeah, so-and-so spent $20 on drinks with in that, or hey, I bought the mirror from you for $43. You're like, who cares? Like, get a life.
TMI, man. TMI.
All right, I'm on soapbox now. I'm sorry.
please step off.
My thing is I just make it obvious. So I just tell everybody I'm paying them for their friendship. Like every transaction I have on Venmo is thank you for your friendship. It's like I'm just paying people for their friendship.
Just make odd references to drug purchasing.
Yeah. Thank you for the white powder. Andrew goes, I feel this so deeply. I have none of the payoffs. I am mad. I know it's the kids that are wrong. The kids.
Andrew. How do you buy your coffee, Andrew? Gosh.
Yeah.
Are they wrong, or do they even care? Like, so that's a question I have: is do they just ignore that there's a social element on there, or like? Are people on there? Are you scrolling around? So. Look what Jimmy bought.
Yeah, but it's like a quick thing.
Yeah, I think some people probably scroll if they've got like a second. I don't think it's like a place that people live. But I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, I think Apple Payments has made life easier too. Jake makes me do Cash App. For him. But at the end of the day, I don't know. I think everybody. It's kind of like big data. Everybody wants to be in big data. They don't know why. Venmo's like, hey, let's create a social aspect. We're not exactly sure why, but
yeah.
So I want to get just a little technical here. Yeah. I assume that this is just like an API tie-in that goes on both ends, or how does the processing work? Oh, yeah. And dive into that a little bit.
Here we go.
Yeah. So there's some cool and there's some not cool pieces to that, and I love it. So yes. There is this, it turns out, there is this kind of little cottage industry of what are called mobile banking providers. And so they offer, they build websites and apps kind of usually kind of white label, and they go to a bank and they'd say, hey, like bank president, you ain't got time or resources to build out all this stupid technology. We'll build your website for you. We'll build your apps for you. We'll just put your logo on it and boom, you're in the app store. Here you go. And then there's this little cottage industry below that of service providers that they plug in. Like, that little thing where like whenever you buy, $4.32 worth of coffee, and then it's going to round that up to $5 and put it in your savings account or give it to a charity or something, like those little things like that. So that's the space that, and by the way, I'm talking about phase one of this business, because phase two is, I'll come back and do that. At a future podcast. How about that?
We'll call it phase two.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. So phase one is like into that little layer of the service provider kind of things. So we can integrate with the mobile banking provider in a couple of different ways. One is exactly what you said. We have a set of APIs. We just kind of set up the authentication with them and work that out. And then that uses their UI and their themes and all that type. And that's all good. Another way though, it's usually kind of faster if they want to just like onboard us to do just sort of a pilot program, is to do an SSO. Where like the Apple just sort of launched like a little float up page or something like that. And then that would be, it looks like our UI and everything's. I think you might, if you've got some experience with Zelle, I think does the same thing too. Sometimes they're an SSO app that sort of kind of flies out over like the Bank of America app, or sometimes it's just like integrated in with Chase. And by the way, I said that, I think it was the opposite. Maybe it's a Chase, I don't know. But anyway,
right.
So, but that's on the front end of things. A thing that I think is sort of, I've learned all about, that is sort of really interesting, is how you integrate on the back end of this whole deal is, talk about like the SOC and PCI and all that stuff, integrating in to these payment processes. So we are like directly plugged in. We are like jacked into the matrix of, we do not sit on top of somebody else. Like we do not sit on top of Venmo. We have a Venmo integration, but we don't sit on, like, they don't process our actual payments. So our payments go directly to the payment processors. And to do that has been just a gargantuan feat of like connecting through like IPsec tunnels and over MPLS cloud things through Verizon and all of this stuff. Oh, it's crazy. But then once you like, and it's this mega super duper lockdown secure thing. And then once you get past that, we're straight up talking to mainframes. So there's like this modern,
here we go,
Kubernetes, cloud, blah, blah. Yes. Talking to this mainframe on a protocol that's like, older than I am. And that's kind of saying something. So
that's really, really cool stuff. Yeah. I mean, listen, I feel like, hey, if you ever need a COBOL dev, Daniel, please let me know. And I'll find you one.
We've had to learn stuff that's like, oh yeah, I remember, there was that class. Yeah. In like computer science class of like, packed binary
BB2. Bits.
Yeah. Like,
dude, I'm telling you, there is like an entire COBOL tech stack. I found out like there's an actually like, there is actually a tech stack for COBOL.
Yeah, oh, totally. We got worked on before.
Yeah.
And yeah, but it's crazy. It's just, it's like, for me, it looks like it's just like a big refrigerator in my head, which is a Sid joke, by the way.
Yeah, but,
that's funny.
There, but you still have, like, companies still use it.
Oh, a ton.
A lot of companies.
Yeah.
A ton.
And well, not only that, like, they have to, right? I mean, like, Raymond James here in Tampa, I mean, they're, you know, same with Citibank. They're here, JP Morgan. I mean, a lot of their stuff, a lot of our financial services and a lot of these huge mega apps that are so vital to our, you know, survival as a country economically are built on platforms that were built in the 70s and 80s and have to be maintained.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this then. Like, would you say, there's no wrong answers here, would you say that COBOL is more stable than the cloud?
I think you can make an argument, right? Like, I mean, they're literally, like what Dan said, there's systems.
Raymond James, because this is a whole nother conversation, but while we're on it.
Are they more stable or is it survivorship bias, right? Like, you are dealing with, you're only today in 2021, the only COBOL systems you interact with are the COBOL systems that have survived for 40 plus years, right?
Right.
So all of
usually financial services.
Yeah. So all the crappy COBOL systems were killed off ages ago. And the only ones that left are the ones that are super stable. So maybe it's not that COBOL is stable. It's just that you only see the stable COBOL apps. You know,
that's why you went to MIT.
That's
MIT level thinking right there.
So let me ask you. So I want to talk about this, and this may be another 30 minutes. I need to ask you. Did you learn anything going to MIT?
Oh my gosh.
Because here's the deal, right?
Just give us everything you picked up in school.
Because here's the deal. Right. My wife and I had this conversation. She went to SCAD, like, you know, for photography. She was like, they didn't teach me how to run a business. Like, I could have learned everything through internships. Like, I went to school for management marketing. I still don't know what any of that is. Like,
because you went to North Carolina, though.
Yeah. Okay, sure. So all that being said, and Dan's going back and getting his MBA from the University of
Florida.
So,
right
now? You
done that right now? 5 weeks. In 5 weeks, I start.
Dude, yes!
So you have Jake and I with a high school education, and then you have two people on there that are going to get their MBA. So I wanted to ask, like, did you go to MIT and you're like, hell yeah, I got it, so much shit, like, I'm going to crush it now?
Definitely not, man.
Thank you for attending my
definitely talk. Not, Dan. Super excited that you were doing this. I'm thrilled for you.
Did you learn anything?
Jealous.
No, but yes. Go do it,
dude. I learned a ton. I did not show up on that campus thinking I was hot shit, hot
stuff. Sorry, podcast. My mom already logged off.
The people that were there. I mean, they were. Brilliant. I am an alumnus and I still am like, I cannot believe they let me in the front door. It's just amazing. But there are people there that were utterly brilliant that I got to learn from them. Like, I'm learning from them in the classroom, out of the classroom. And I think, so as an under, I did an undergrad business degree because I was an idiot and I didn't know what to do. And I just like, fine, that's the classes where all my friends are going. I don't care. Same. But I didn't have any context as a 20-year-old of like, why do I need to care about this stuff? And I remember having a professor in undergrad that was like, this and this and this, and you're going to need to know this if you're going to run a company someday. And I'm like, dude, there's 30 of us in this classroom. How many of us do you think are going to be the CEO of Ford Motor Company next year? I'm guessing none, right? But, you know, turns out I was right. But also turns out I was wrong because, like, I wound up, you know, we all ran up running businesses. But going back and doing this later in life, I have run a business and I've screwed it up and I have no idea what I'm doing. But I can bring my, like, moron into the classroom. And then the professor talks about kind of the same topics. And I'm like, oh, geez, that's why we've screwed that up so bad. Like, I have the context to understand.
Just more insight, more kind of, like you said, context.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
So, Daniel, what was it like? I mean, you had a great career. You exited a company that was acquired and everything else. What was it like to kind of put that on pause? I assume you went to MIT full time, right? Like on campus, like in classroom, or how did that work?
Yeah. So my family did not move. We stayed here in Nashville and I just flew back and forth a lot.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Sure. So what was that? What was that like going from, you know, kind of the to running a business and running a tech team and everything else there, you know, very practical, right, to a little bit more theoretical in the classroom, and then now back to practical. How has your how has that translated to this next position for you?
Man, look, Leanne was a wonderful success. There's wonderful, beautiful people that work there. I was past burnout. Right, dude, running startups is hard. It's super hard, and it's hard. It's hard on your mind. It's hard on your body. It's hard on your family. It's hard on your relationships. It's hard on everything, right? And that's when you succeed. When you succeed, it sucks, right? If you don't succeed, it sucks, right? So I would, yeah, I need it. I'm fall on my face grateful that I had this opportunity to, like, you know, and just reset. Like, I had this, the deal went down and we sold the company, and I just was basically like, yeah, I'm done. See you guys. And the acquiring company was like mega, super mega gracious and supportive of me and the school thing. And I just had this time to just like focus on school. And so like the first airplane ride back after all of this was completed, like I dropped my crap off at the hotel, and MIT is like right on the Charles River in Boston or Cambridge. And I have this running route that goes around the river, and I was out on the river running, and it was snowing, and it like, it's the most peaceful experience of my life.
I got goosebumps, not gonna lie. Dang.
This is like a, this is a real story. You should drink.
Yeah.
Oh man. But yeah, then I got, I explored a bunch of ideas of like even random, like non-tech kind of things, and just did some soul searching kind of stuff. And you know, there's also this little element of it too. Like once school was over, I came back to Nashville, and like Taylor is really a part of the story here, where like I had to kind of reintegrate. Not Taylor, but actually, you know what? I'm hoping I could say this stuff. So I'm going to do it right now. Like Taylor was super helpful to me. People at Vaco were super helpful to me, like Paul Frankenberg and Chris Spinman and Alex Nadell. And just the Nashville tech community, like Mark Montgomery and all kinds of people. I mentioned Ben and Amy Henderson, Marty Pazlik. He like took a call, like Marty Pazlik, holy cow. That man single-handedly runs like a percentage of the world economy, you know? And he took a call from me, and like, you know, I'm trying to figure out like, what do I do now post school? And like, do I do, you know, tech leadership? Do I do another startup? Do I do non-tech kind of stuff? So there was a bunch of soul searching right there. And then, like I said, at the beginning of that story is like, I went back to Boston. We all got back together, and I hooked up with my old classmates and went, you know, got on board with this. And there was a little bit of trepidation in the early days. Like, dudes, I ain't written much code in a couple of years. I'm more than rusty, but, you know,
that's awesome.
Dove back
that's in. Really cool.
Awesome. Well,
cool story, man.
Daniel, thank you. We got to wrap up here. We appreciate it. We're definitely going to have you back for phase two. The saga continues for
you guys. Payments. You guys rock. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Well, you enjoy the rest of your Thursday, big dog, and we'll talk soon. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate it. We got some more guests coming up over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
We're really, really excited to have those. So thanks, y'all, again. Appreciate it.
See you guys.
Peace.
See
ya.
Thank y'all so much for tuning in to this episode of the Unicorn Finders. If you found any of that interesting or helpful at all, please share it with your friends. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or want to be a part of our podcast, be sure to email us at info@theunicornfinders.com.
And while you're at it, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe us 5 stars and share it with a friend or two. We'll see you next week.